So it's important for the entrepreneur to also get to know the investor. And there's this concept of reverse due diligence where you getting a sense of who's this guy or lady who's investing in my business. What do the other portfolio companies look like? What value have they brought to the other portfolio companies? So jump on a call and have a chat to a founder that they've invested into and see if it is as pleasant working with this person as the initial indications are.
Hello and welcome to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa, a source of inspiration and actions from African leaders and founders. I am Mark Israel, founder, CEO, startup coach, university lecturer, engineer, and human being, and I have the pleasure of being your host today. In this episode, we'll step into the world of money and funding with a very active business angel from South Africa, Abu Kassim from Josie Angels. Abu, thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well, thank you. And yourself?
Cool. I'm great. And it's a pleasure to have you. We're working together somehow through the African Business Angel Network. And of course, it's a pleasure to have you as a serious and experienced business angel to share your experience, both as an entrepreneur, actually, and a business angel in South Africa. But before we deep dive into our topic today, so I would like to plan the decor and let our audience know more about you and Josie Angels. So can you quickly introduce yourself and your investment experience?
Yeah, sure. So personal background, I grew up in a family business, so entrepreneurship's in my blood. I spent 10 years in asset management, locally in South Africa and then in Dubai as well. And then took some time off to study further. Got to see some of Europe's startup ecosystems, got to see the US ecosystem, and came back to Johannesburg, where I'm now, and started implementing some of the things I was seeing elsewhere, some of the best practices, some of the cool stuff that I was seeing happening in Europe and America. I wanted that to start happening here. And got involved in the startup ecosystem. This was the end of 2012, beginning of 2013. And that's where I've fallen in love with what I've fallen in love with and stuck to ever since. Josie Angels, as an investor network, we've been around since 2015. And we've grown to 29 angels. We've made a total of 45 early stage investments, predominantly into tech and tech related businesses. But we have made some non-tech investments as well.
Cool. And maybe because, well, you have experience in other markets than the African market. So what do you see as big differences between Europe, the US, and the African startup ecosystems?
Yeah, there are a few. So I think the funding landscape is something that is still maturing on the continent. We don't see the same amount of investment as we would see in developed markets, but it's coming along okay with the help of angel networks in Mauritius, South Africa, and elsewhere. Things are happening. The VC segment is growing probably a bit quicker, so we are seeing quite a lot of VC investment happening. I think the biggest challenge though has been the customer adoption, that early customer acquisition. Which you'd get and is par for the course in other markets, which have got a greater propensity for risk. Mm-hmm. South Africa in particular tends to stick to the tried and trusted. So it's stickier business. They don't experiment as much. And as a result, it's harder for an earlier stage business to then get into the market. So I think that's the biggest challenge. And as a result, building out a startup is a longer journey. There are a number of different factors, but you can't blitz scale as you can in America. The average South African startup from start to exit is an 8 to 10 year journey. And I think the numbers are similar elsewhere in the continent. But it also does mean in those first few months of your life as a business, you've got to juggle a few things to keep the lights on. You're often doing more than one thing just to get by. And you can't focus your efforts in the way you would elsewhere, where you've got this privilege premium. You know, there's this ability to focus on the business, solely on the business. I think on the continent, you've got to hustle and get by and find ways of keeping the lights on.
And I think that's probably an African trait as well. So, you know, irrespective of the business, things are more complex, honestly, in all our countries. And then you need to juggle many, many balls where you tend to be specialized, or you can specialize in larger markets, where here, you're a jack of all trades.
Yeah, I guess that is us. That's the way we grew up. And yeah, in many respects, that bodes well for life afterwards as an entrepreneur. You've got this ability to adapt, this ingenuity, which it comes naturally to us, I guess.
Yeah. And so I understand that so the difference in the landscape. But based on the fact that you've invested into 45 early stage startups, so of course you probably have, you know, looked into many more than 45. And so based on your experience, on your investments, what set apart the successful startups from the rest of the pack?
I think the first thing is, and the obvious thing is, the team and their ability to execute. So there's this concept of founder market fit. And essentially what that is the founding team uniquely placed to go and execute on a business? Do they have industry knowledge? Do they have networks that they can leverage to go and execute on the idea that they've got? So that's the first thing, is the team. Along with that comes the passion, comes the technical expertise, comes the experience. So there's a whole lot of things bundled up with under team, but that's probably the most important thing. And then there's the question of uniqueness, the idea itself, is there unique intellectual property? Is there something different around the value proposition that we're not getting elsewhere? So those are the things that I tend to look for in a business. But first and foremost, team. And of the ones that do succeed, it's all about grit. It's all about determination. Often you get a lot of no's, but if you just keep on doing what you're doing, eventually those doors will open. And often it's a door that closed months ago that tends to reopen at an opportune time when you're least expecting it. We've seen it now with a portfolio company. They started speaking to a government organization many, many months back, and the deal had almost gone dead. And all of a sudden, the institution picked up the conversation and wanted to seal the deal yesterday. It was almost like an immediate thing. And so they've now got a service level agreement in place, which was signed this week. But it was almost, we'd written that off. But it's just all about that determination and keeping that momentum going.
And this question of determination and grit and resilience, probably do you see this has changed with COVID, or it's just the same, just probably longer, and you need to be more resilient, or it's just just business as usual?
No, it's certainly not business as usual. And if anything, you've got to be more resilient. What we are seeing, particularly in the B2B space, is that those sales cycles are much longer. So historically, it would take you 8 months, a year, to get into close a B2B sale. That's now ballooned out to about 18 months for most businesses. And within, say, the heavy regulated industries like the financial sector, it could even be longer. You've got to be more resilient. You've got to find ways of keeping the lights on while you're managing these conversations you're having in the background.
But but moving from 8 months to a year to 18 months is almost doubling the time it takes to sell to large organizations. So it's, from an investment perspective, it should be a headache, because, well, you can fund somebody to get some fuel in the tank for 8 months. Now, fueling for 18 months is a different story.
Yeah, so your funding rounds need to then account for that. And yeah, the advice we give most founders is look to fund for 24 months. Whereas previously it was 12, maybe 18 months, aim for 24 months worth of runway. Who knows what things will look like? I think we are starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccine being rolled out across the continent. But every second month we're hearing about new strains that have. There's the South African variant. There's the UK variant. We don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty. So go and get 2 years worth of runway, so that you can focus on what you need to do.
So from an investor's perspective, an investor's landscape. So what's the current state of affairs? So the runway is longer, as I understand, and the sales cycles are longer. But are they as many startups as before? The dynamism is still there. So what's your perspective really on the business currently?
Yeah, so I can't really speak for the VC segment.
Yeah.
What I can say is that I have seen a lot of existing portfolio companies get follow-on funding. And my assumption there is that they've identified good assets within their portfolio, and they want to make sure that those good assets survive this time. But in the angel space, I think the one thing we do is take more of a portfolio view. And by portfolio, it's your real estate assets. It's your listed equity assets. It's your investments into certain resources. And a lot of those assets particularly initially, took a dive. So a lot of the equity markets, unfortunately, came off in a big way. There's certain sectors within the equity markets, like the tech stocks, that have done well, if you look at the US tech stocks in particular. But angels take this broader portfolio view. That's the first thing. And so where I'm losing money here, I need to then be a bit more conservative here. And there's this balancing act that you're trying to do. The second thing is there's general economic headwind. And this is the B2B sales cycle that I'm speaking about. Even amongst the consumers, the circulation of money hasn't been what we used to, unfortunately. There's this concept in economics, I think it's momentum, and relates to the circulation of money. We're not seeing that same circulation. And as a result, we're seeing some conservatism come through in the decision-making with amongst angels. The other thing is challenges with the due diligence process. So typically, you'd go and do site visits. You'd go and have coffees, one-on-ones, and you'd get to know the person. Because of lockdown regulations, you can't have those coffees. You can't go and do those site visits. We invested last year into a Cape Town-based business, and we couldn't travel down to Cape Town to go and meet the team. So it did everything virtually. But it did prolong the due diligence process. Instead of taking 4 to 6 weeks, it took 8 weeks. We've just got to work around some of the limitations we've got. And then lastly, there are certain sectors right now that are no-goes almost. If you look at tourism, you look at the event space, it's a difficult sell to an investor at the moment. And it's unfortunate, but we don't know when flights and travel will return to normal. So as a result, we steering clear of some of those sectors.
Yeah, so it has a direct impact. Yeah, I got that. And basically the length it takes to do the right things, due diligence is a very important piece. So it takes longer. So everything takes longer, is more difficult. Yeah, and remote engagement is something which, yeah, everybody speaks about remote work and how cool it is, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, having a coffee with somebody, it makes a whole difference.
Yeah, I in my previous business, I had a partner in Latin America. And we every week we jump on a Skype call. And for a good few years, this is what we did. And he eventually came to South Africa in 2016. And I think in 3 hours of workshopping a particular area of the business, we achieved more than we did in 3 months worth of Skype calls.
Yeah, I think that we all have the same experience. Mm. Yeah, but hopefully we'll come back to the new normal and things will be different for sure. But let's go back to the business angels. And so business angels are really the one piece of the funding equation. And basically, so after coming just after the founders and family, friends and fools, money. So for all the startups and entrepreneurs that are listening to us, and who think about going to a business angel to raise some money. So what from a BA perspective are you looking at in a startup? So we talked about the ability to execute, the uniqueness, the grit. But really, you know, when you don't know the guys and where you're meeting them for the first time and before you enter due diligence, what really are you looking at or are you looking for into those startups?
Yeah, so there's six things. So the first is the team, and we've covered that at length. I won't go into that in more detail. The second thing is the solution and the uniqueness. And again, we've covered that. The third thing is the size of the market. So what does this journey look like? How many people can we target eventually? Is the solution scalable to go and actually be implemented in these other markets? That's another factor in itself. The fourth factor is traction. So what have you achieved to date? And often there's this concept of product market fit. If you can prove product market fit, you're a long way in terms of being investment ready. Even if it's just a handful of customers on your books, if they are repeat customers, that speaks volumes of about your solution. And then the fifth thing, number five, is fit. So as an investor, we tend to invest in the things we know because we're familiar with it. So I'm a person much like the founder across the table from me is, I've got a background, a personal background. For me, it happens to be in the financial services space. So I tend to know about financial services. I tend to know about the landscape, the environment, and also know people in the space. So remember, we bring three things to the table: knowledge, networks, and capital. And it's usually in that order of importance. So often the capital is the starting point of our conversation, but actually the knowledge and the networks are often more valuable than the capital over time. If I invest in the things I know, I can leverage my knowledge and networks. If I invest in, say, a healthcare hardware, it's something I'm not all that familiar with. I don't know people in the healthcare space. It becomes a lot more difficult for me to then add value outside of the money. So fit is number five. And number six is return on investment. Yeah. What does this journey look like? What exit is maybe coming down the road? And am I likely to make decent money with this? So there's two elements to ROI. So financials is almost always there. How much money am I going to make from this business? But there's often a second element, which is impact. And are we going to change people's lives for the better? You know, and if you can tell a good story around both of those two areas, I think that will hold you in good stead when it comes to speaking to an investor.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. I just want to come back quickly on the something that you mentioned. So what a BA is bringing, and I think I probably would say the same thing for a VC, is a knowledge network and capital. And you put capital in the third place, okay, which is interesting because, well, people are thinking funding that we need, you know, a million rand because we want to do this or to do that. Okay, cool. But then at the end of the day, the real value you're bringing is, yeah, your knowledge of the sector and, of course, the network and your contacts. But I would love to hear from you from your experience as well, sir, because, yes, people are looking for capital. When you start talking to them, you probably are shifting that view and say, yeah, well, we're going to fund you, we're going to give you that money that you're asking for, but this is what we bring to the market. How do the startups react to that? Are they very open to it, or just say, you know, suspicious, or just want money, we don't want the rest? What's the story behind that?
Yeah, I think even before making that investment, before signing the contract and transferring the money, it's important to get on the same page. You know, we've got this vision, and it's one you believe in, one I believe in, of where this business is going. And these are the stepping stones we're going to follow to get to them, to realize this vision. It's important for the angel to buy into that. But also important that we get a sense that this is a partnership. We can work together as people. We after investing, we become partners in the business. Minority shareholders for the most part, but we still have a stake of equity in the business. And so can we work together as partners? Do we see this as being an amicable working relationship that is going to last, like I said, 8 years, maybe 10 years? And so that it's very important to date before you get married, for that reason. I've seen a lot of businesses being pulled apart by people being on different pages, people having my vision's this, your vision's that, and it's a wedge. You know, it starts off small initially, but as it progresses, it just gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah, the partnership element, I think, is key. I love the fact that, yeah, you need to date before you get married. and you need to know each other. I think that you need to align the vision. You need to align the way that you work. You may have good ideas and you know, great execution capabilities. But at the end of the day, if we work differently and there is not the fit that is required, well, the partnership's going to fail and you cannot bring what you need to bring to those guys.
On both sides, right? So it's important for the entrepreneur to also get to know the investor. And there's this concept of reverse due diligence where you getting a sense of who's this guy or lady who's investing in my business. What do the other portfolio companies look like? What value have they brought to the other portfolio companies? You know, jump on a call and have a chat to a founder that they've invested into and see if you know, it is as pleasant working with this person as the initial indications are.
I like this idea of reverse due diligence. So but do you advise basically, so you know, a founder that comes to you seeking for investment, so you tend to think that could be a good investment, so you start dating and would you give him or her the fact that, hey, you know what, you need to discuss with other startups that we invested in because you need to understand who we are? So are you giving that advice to those guys?
So I do a lot of mentoring in the startup space like you. Mm-hmm. And this is the advice I give my mentees. And I'm open to any portfolio company who we're speaking to and in negotiations with to speak to any of my other portfolio companies and get a sense of who we are as people or partners in a business. There needs to be a level of comfort on both sides before we actually proceed.
Mm. Okay, and did you or did they have any surprises after that kind of thing, or did they discover things that, you know, you did not think about before?
Not that I've been told. They haven't searched the dark web yet, but I don't know. No one's come back and said, hey, you know what, I don't want you to be part of my business.
And talking about that, and it's, I would not say it's, you know, uncovering things that have been hidden under the carpet, but are there any big no's from a funding perspective, you know, businesses that you don't want to enter in or sectors? Or we talked about tourism and events, and we understand for the peer, it's, I would say, hopefully it's just a temporary issue, but But are there big red flags for you from an investment perspective?
Yeah, there's a few. So I think the first one is shareholder loans, so large shareholder loans. Often the owner, the founder is contributing time and sometimes money. And that contribution goes towards building value in the business. But often the way people account for it is through loans. And I've actually seen mentors within the startup space tell founders, go and account for every hour that you're actually putting in your business and structure that as a loan. The problem is you can't have both. You can't have a shareholder loan and equity value. So you've got to choose, is this business valued at 5 million rand, or do you want to share on the loan of 5 million rand, in which case there's no equity value in your business. So I've seen businesses with large shareholder loans. That's a big challenge. The second big challenge is debt equity. So often we come across businesses that have been operating for 3, 4, 5 years. They're now looking, or they have been looking for funding for some time. They come across us, but they've got legacy business that they've done before. Sometimes it's because of a pivot they've done. And ultimately they've got someone sitting on their cap table who's got 15, 20% of equity in the business, but is no longer involved in the business. That's deemed dead equity. And anything over 5, say 10% is a concern for us. Often we'd ask the entrepreneur to go and clean up the cap table before we look to invest. So that's another one. The third one is focus. So if I'm going to invest in your business, if I'm going to back you financially, then my expectation is that you're going to do everything possible to make this happen as a business. Don't run multiple businesses. If you've got other business interests, disclose those, but then use the money wisely and give sufficient focus to the business that we're now discussing.
I just want to go back on the previous thing on the debt equity. So why, and just want to clarify that. Why do you see that as an issue? So 5-10% of that, you know, passive basically or debt that is still there. So why is it an issue? I'm not sure I got that.
Yeah, so debt equity is someone who's no longer supporting the business, whether it be financial or operational. Sometimes it's a co-founder. So a co-founder starts a business, you and I start a business together, we don't know how to split equity, so we go 50-50. Mm-hmm. I get a job, and that job is now a full-time job, but yeah, I say to you, you know what, I think I can still support you on weekends. And 2 years later, I get married and have kids, but I've still got 50% of equity in your business. And the weekends that I promised you are no longer possible. So effectively, you and the BA and you, Mark, are building value for someone who's no longer contributing to the business, and who's a decision maker in the business. Effectively, we're diluting the value that we bring as BA and Mark together to the business, because there's a third person who's actually benefiting and no longer part of the business. That mm-hmm. can be true for an investor, that can be true for a co-founder. Especially in the early days, it's so difficult. You know the stats, 95% of startups fail. Yeah. If there's a member of the team who's no longer pulling their weight, it that stat goes from 95 to 96, 97%. It just makes the possibility of you actually achieving what you want to achieve diminishes that possibility.
Mm-hmm. I got it. So yeah, it's a passive investor, but in the startup you need all hands on deck. And so yeah, you
hopefully there's still some capital for us to leverage to go and execute on this business model. If that capital is no longer there, and if there's no promise of further capital, then the contribution is unfortunately not there. We need you to help support this business. whether that then be through your knowledge or your networks, help us. You know, let's come to some sort of agreement where we're in this together. We're all on the same bus. Let's make sure the bus gets to its destination.
Yeah, that's critical. Oh, okay, I got it. Now, and I think it's an interesting point here that you're raising. It's so the relationship between the entrepreneur and the funder, so the BA, is more than just capital. So I think that's network and knowledge is key. So it goes beyond that. You're telling that you're mentoring as well some of the startups. So what should an entrepreneur expect actually from a BA, just beyond capital? Yeah, I understand network and knowledge, but what are the expectations in terms of time, energy, focus from their investor?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, the founding team or the founder, there needs to be an understanding that this is your business, right? I'm not going to be the CEO. That's your job. And that needs to be a common understanding between the angel and the founding team. So that's the first thing. The second thing in terms of support is a function of where the business is. So I've invested in businesses which are very early stage, solopreneurs, so single founder, and tech founder at that. And then it's a question of providing as much support as possible. And what I did with that particular business was it was a daily phone call. I do the school runs, the drop-off. On my way back, I'd be sitting in traffic, pick up the phone, speak to the founder. How did yesterday go? What's today looking like? Any particular challenges you need my help with? And it was just a question of that founder leveraging as much benefit from me as possible. Where we found that the calls maybe didn't have the same impact they had initially, we wound that down to weekly meetings. But you've got to be flexible in terms of your support. So on one end of the spectrum, it could be that was an exceptional case. It's not always the case, but it could be a daily phone call. Probably the norm is a monthly check-in, whether it's a phone call, an email, we're just catching up on the business. That's probably the norm. I've done weekly meetings as well, so on that end of the spectrum. And then on the very far end of the spectrum, I think the probably the most basic engagement is a quarterly update, which is typically an email. Here's where the business is at. This is my commentary on the quarter that's been. These are the metrics that we're measuring. And this is how things have progressed over the last quarter. These are the challenges we're having. Any thoughts, any way you can assist me? That's on the far end of the spectrum. So it ranges depending on the needs of the business. And the business needs to drive and be clear on what support they need from the angel.
So yeah, it's probably a level of maturity as well. So what the guys are capable of doing by themselves, but have you seen so from let's say from the solo entrepreneur that you're talking about? So you've got daily calls with that guy. So he was pretty sure that he was happy to have those daily calls. Okay, yeah. he was feeling supported, and that was instrumental, hopefully, to his success.
Yeah, it was all about just helping the business. I think as a partner in the business, you've got a vested interest. You want to see it succeed. We're on this bus together. So how do we work together to make it happen?
And I think that's what you are saying is critical, and particularly from a business angel's perspective, because you're early stage. So it's really, the business is a couple of months, couple of years, so very early. And we know the sales cycles are longer, so it's really supporting the business to grow, to to bring it to a certain level. So support is critical. Have you ever met startups that you feel are good on all the six dimensions you talked about, but are not really coachable or mentorable somehow?
Yeah. Look, I think they always should be a healthy element of self-efficacy, like self-belief in what you're doing. Yeah. It's actually an entrepreneur trait that we look for. But at the same time, you know, we're in this business together. Can we have a conversation around this vision? Have you thought of that? Have you thought of this? Have you tried this? So I think, and this is why you date before you get married, is so you can get a sense of whether what you put forward is being picked up or not. I just need your money and I'm going to do what I'm going to do irrespective, or can we work this out together? I think one of the inevitabilities in the life of a startup is tough times. It's never a walk in the park. There's always going to be challenging times. It's when you hit those challenging times, you want to know that the person next to you is open to suggestions, is open to looking right when we've been looking left all this time. So coachability is a big part of what we look for in an entrepreneur as well.
I think that's critical. And I think that the fact that you mentioned it's not a smooth ride, it's not a walk in the park, shit happens. Okay, let's call a spade a spade. And you need to be able to be taught that, you know, well, things will happen and fail forward, as I used to say. So it's just, go ahead. But we are here to support and we are to help. Definitely.
The journey is never a straight line. And the journey is a lot of this, and eventually you find your way there.
Yeah, no, that's true. So the shortest route from A and B is definitely not a straight line in the entrepreneur's world.
Yeah.
We could speak for hours about that. So, but we're getting, very close to the end. Close to 40 minutes that we've been talking. Actually, 40 minutes have been going. Thought it was 2 minutes. So if you had really one piece of advice for startups or for entrepreneurs, the guys starting their business and they want to think about, approaching funding. So what would be that piece or that pieces that bring it one or two, a good piece of advice to how to approach funding for a young entrepreneur or new entrepreneur?
Yeah, think of it as a relationship. Don't think of it as capital. Begin that relationship long before you need the capital, because when the capital is needed, it flows a lot easier. Investor relations is something we often not neglect, but it just doesn't cross our minds as founders. There's a whole lot of other things that are going on in our minds and keeping us busy. But try and develop those relationships, and often there's a progression. So, if you come across someone who you really like, ask them if they'll mentor you. Ask them if they would then, and often the progression from mentorship is it formally an advisor to the business, and then from there potentially an investor in the business. But think of it as a relationship. Don't think of it as, I'm going to put in an application, punch out an application, you'll get my form, and 2 weeks later, the money's going to hit my bank account. That's not going to happen.
I think that's really valuable. And honestly, I don't think that's something that we think about when we start a business. We may know people, I've started many businesses, and I would say this has never crossed my mind to entertain some relationship with potential investors. It's just, let's do the things, and then, oh shit, we get short of money, we need to raise some capital. So let's look for the business angels. And it's, well, as you said, it's not going to happen overnight, not even in 2 weeks, probably not in 2 months, actually. So it takes time. So let's start early.
Yeah, start early. So often a good starting point is LinkedIn. Jump on LinkedIn and go and find your perfect partner in the business. That could be the CEO of a large corporate. It could be someone who's into angel investing and doing this almost on a full-time basis. Go and reach out to four or five people quite early on and just ask for their thoughts on the business. Get them to be your mentor, and hopefully that relationship progresses over time.
Wise words. That's pretty cool. So thanks very much. I think that was a great piece of advice. Great pieces of advice. I think, you know, looking at all the dimensions that you shared with us, it's very, very cool, very valuable. So thanks very much for your time. And thanks to all our listeners who tuned up to this episode. So since we're at the end, so you've been listening to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa, a source of inspiration and actions from African leaders and founder. I'm Mark Israel, co-founder and CEO of The Talk Collective, the company behind Entrepreneurs Talk Africa. And today we had the immense pleasure of hosting Abu Kassim from Josie Angels, right from Johannesburg, South Africa. So before our next episode, thank you for taking 10 seconds to leave us 5 stars on the podcast app you're using. It really helps us. So thank you in advance, and see you next week for more inspirations and actions from across the African continent. Ladies and gentlemen, so we're just out of this wonderful interview with Abu Kassim from Josie Angels, and now I'm back with Gerald and Jason. So, hey, how are you feeling? What are your thoughts about this cool guy and the information that he shared with us freely?
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Mark. Thanks for having us again this week. It's always very interesting to listen to. Always interesting when we do like episode around funding, be it from VC, angels, or PL lending platform. It's really interesting to listen to their perspective. And today we had the perspective of a business angel. Me personally, as an entrepreneur who, of course, goes into these funding rounds for my own startup. I think it's the same for you, Jason, and to a certain extent, you too, Mark. You have been into that process of going through funding, etc. Like, start building this relationship with your investors. Abu talked about it. He highlighted that the fact that, you know, it's you start dating before getting married, and I think it's a perfect depiction of what it is to raise funds with VCs and funding institutions, you know, investors. It's first of all building a relationship. Like, we tend to think like I will show up tomorrow, I have my business plan and I need 10 million, whatever million, I'll meet the first investor, pitch my brilliant idea, and boom. Well, not really. Like, you need to multiply that by 100 at least, you know. So we tend to forget that it is a long, lengthy and energy demanding process from the founders, from the founding team, to go into funding. And it was really nice to listen to the perspective of Abu on that. Another thing that that I've penned down from what he said, and this has been quite repetitive in everyone we hosted that talked about the funding subject, the founder market fit and the team, the capability of execution. This has been a recurring theme. Quite recently, I was watching a video of Elon Musk when he was describing how he's going to go to Mars and all the things he's going to do with SpaceX. And I was really, really surprised, like, how much into the details he could go and he could explain to you in like plain, simple language what he's going to do. Like, the guy one day is selling electric car. He's super good at it. The next day he wants to bring you to Mars and he has all the details under control. He knows what he's talking about. He knows the nitty-gritty details of the industry. He knows the KPIs and all those stuff. Of course, not as an expert, as an aeronautic or space technology expert would know, but you can see that the guy know what he's talking about. And this is one of the things that Abu also mentioned, this founder market fit. Like, as a founder, do you really know your market? Do you know all the workings of your market, you know? And lastly, team, again and again and again, team and execution capabilities. Like, so many people came to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa and all voiced out this. You need to surround yourself with a team that can deliver, a team you can trust, a team that you can grow and grow with you, and a team that can go the distance, because let's not forget it's a marathon. Yeah, that's it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I actually agree with some of your points there, and definitely, you know, that team aspect and everything. But one of the things I wanted to pick up on, which was quite interesting and how he highlighted it, you know, when we talk about the African ecosystem and him having the experience from Europe and America and how it differs here. And he hit a point for me that really resonated, that respect in terms of early adoption, you know, early customer acquisition, that risk element, that the customer's risk adverse in Africa. That's a really key point. And it has a lot of knock-on effects. I know it's cultural and it's something that is changing. We are adopting technology more and more. But what it does is it makes the journey, the entrepreneurial journey that we are sold from Europe and America, it makes it a much longer, painstaking. You know, you have to fight for every customer that you get on in at the early stage. And that's a really important point for founders to realize, African founders, is that, yes, you know, in theory, the startup is exactly the same structure as it would be in Europe or America. But in practice, in actually putting these technologies out there, you need to be aware and not get frustrated that it will take longer, you know. So he also mentions that term blitzscaling, which myself, I'm a very keen follower of Reid Hoffman. You know, I love the theory. I think it's, you know, it's fantastic. But blitzscaling as a theory is amazing, and it can be done. I mean, I'm not saying it can't be done in Africa, but what I'm saying is that is even more out of reach to an African entrepreneur than it is to someone in America or Europe. And basically, the blitzscaling theory, for people who are not accustomed to it, is basically means that you scale and grow at all costs. So you throw huge amounts of money into it, and you scale and grow at all costs. Very similar to the blitz of, you know, of the World War II, where the German army went through the lines of defense and just kept going. At all costs, it was about movement, growth, and trajectory. Now, in the African climate, you need to be aware that there's other things that will affect it, not quite the same as Europe. And then the other key thing I took away from it, and I think a lot of us will, is that knowledge, network, and capital. You know, knowing what you want from a funding angel, you need to be in your mind aware of what are you trying to get out of this relationship. Is it just the money? Is it, you know, is it the knowledge? Is it the connections? Is it that mentoring? Because that will very much affect who you take your funding from and if you take funding. So, you know, if it's just capital, why not take a loan? Or, you know, those aspects. So those are some key points to think about. And then also, like you said, that dating before marriage, it's a long-term thing. And just like dating and marriage, if you don't have those hard conversations at the start, they get more and more difficult to have. It becomes a bigger, bigger wedge, as he says. So if you got some niggling thought in your mind, say it now, because that niggling thought can turn into disaster and ruin the whole company. So those were my big takeaways. Obviously, there's a few more and I could go on, but I think really those are the key aspects from this conversation that I took away. And I really thought it was a great foundation for entrepreneurs to understand that, you know, that business angel understanding of how that relationship should work.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. I think it's spot on. I think that the one thing to add on, you know, you said almost all. I think that the one thing that really struck me, and it goes to so many things I even share with people and I don't realize, is you need to get prepared. And that means that the two things that he said is, and the one advice that he gave at the end is, well, no investors, start to know investors. You're not asking for money yet. You're asking for them to help you get your business rolling before you ask them for funding. I think that's key. And we all know that network, and know that network capital is one thing, that your network is your net worth in the end. That's pretty key. But the fact that he said, do reverse due diligence, know who you are talking to before you start talking to them, to me is makes complete sense. And at the same time, it's just probably something that I would never really have thought of, you know, even if I were to launch another business today, says, yeah, well, I know I'm maybe the older guy, so I have the network, and this is something I'm not thinking about. But as a young entrepreneur, and I remember when I launched my first business and I was 27 that time, I had almost no network. I was just out of college. And I said, well, let's start doing something. And we hit some walls at that time. And that was exactly because, well, we haven't done our work in preparing the fact that we're going to launch a business. It will require feedback. It will require capital. It will require a long-term journey. And you're so eager to start that you jump over fences. And I think that, to me, that's really, really key. Do your work before doing mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I found it funny that was the conversation we were having just before.
We were talking about due diligence just
before. Yeah, for opportunities, you know. That's something that I am very much doing now. And it just involves talking to people that they may know, talking to your network about them, talking to other startups, and just getting a bit of a background. Like you said, you wouldn't get into a big financial deal with somebody you didn't know. So apply the same thinking. Yeah, it's such a good point.
Yeah, but I also feel sometimes like our eyes are on the price so much. It's like, I need to raise that amount of money to do whatever I want to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we're too focused on just raising the money. We're like, we're not even thinking about the process. Like, how will this process grow me as an entrepreneur? You know, this learning curve of building the relationship and, you know, reaching those first hurdles, learning why and adjusting, coming back again and all of that. I'm talking from personal experience when I started that. Just eyes on the prize and business plan, idea, pitch, boom, boom, we'll get funding.
And you said it there just there. You know, like there's this eye on the prize and it's all about the pitch. You know, it's like, how good can we get this pitch? You know, my pitch needs to be better so I can get funding. It's not about the pitch. The value is the business. Focus on the business and the angels will come. Don't focus on the pitch.
But you know, I would draw a parallel actually in the corporate world. So for those guys who are listening who are not in the entrepreneur's world, but in the corporate world, and sometimes you hit a glass ceiling in the corporate world. I can go up and blah blah blah, and you hear a lot of things. Yeah, you know, I'm not liking what I'm doing. Anything. It's just, well, because guys, you haven't done your work in managing up. You know, a lot of people that I know are very, very good at managing up, managing their N+1, N+2 above them. It's like the same thing. So as Abu says, go and meet those CEOs, large group CEOs. No, I'm nobody. Nobody will listen to me, not the CEOs. You know what? They will listen to you if you try to speak to them. Of course, you need to have meaningful things to say, but you need to manage up. And the same thing, you launch a company, as you said, launch a company, we do the business plan, we think that you're a champion of the world and we're going to raise 2 million. Never happens. Never, ever. Entertain the relationship first. It's just, so basic, but
yeah.
Anyway, that's all.
That's why we're here, Mark. That's why we created this platform.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah,
I would have loved to have that 20 years ago.
Man. Exactly. Well, we hope that someone listening is you in 20 years and has taken this advice on and is able to avoid some of those mistakes.
Yeah, but just to give you know, a couple of feedback. Yeah, 25 years ago when I started my first company, actually I did not have we did not have internet and the whole things and podcasts and everything. But
you are that old, Mark.
We were having monthly dinner with my investor, okay, and we took the opportunity to have a good dinner at a nice restaurant. It was Tuesday. It was the first or second Tuesday of the month. And then we were discussing the business and we were sharing the experience and everything. That was, you know, that podcast at the time. So, yeah, you need to do it. That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
Nice fun, gents.
So, Mark, you're very close to the 100.